It's only Thursday, October 7th. We have some, we have a lot to talk about today. Get GM, being ready or being certain. Kyle, you got some new sneakers we got to talk about.
They are so fly, man. Everywhere I go, the people really want to know who I is and who
I be. They stop and stare when they see me. If instead of once, no need to repeat. Things are shifting. Me, you fall to your knees. Things are changing.
Every day, man.
Bunch of people are about to get together next week. I mean, I feel like I can't wake up without feeling like something has changed, like, substantially. Remember when nothing substantial changed for, like, a year at a time?
Isn't that interesting how, yeah, like, for a good amount of time, it was like you could kind of expect what every day was going to feel like.
Mm-hmm.
But it just seems like every day, you know, I got this is super random, but I got there was a Facebook post of, like, a whole truck of Corvettes in the city, near the city that I live in Nashville, on fire overnight. Right? It's like, how does that even happen? Why does that happen? And what does that mean for the dealer that was potentially getting those?
The six dealers that were getting that truck full of Corvettes.
Right. Exactly. It's like just every single day you wake up to new news, new ideas, whether it be, you know, seemingly bad news, seemingly good news, stock market, you know, midday, like turning to an about face from what was happening earlier in the day because of some market shift or market news. It's literally the Wild West.
Everything's so volatile. Well, it's the Wild West, but there's also that element of scarcity that's among us right now, like in the auto industry specifically, right? You think of those Corvettes and you're like, oh yeah, there was another truckload behind it, you know, 18 months ago.
Yeah.
But now it's like, oh my gosh. And just like stability, you know, when everything was kind of locked down and, you know, our nation went through a pretty big powder keg moment, right? It was just the volatility that any little thing could disrupt it. And this goes back to what we were talking about earlier in the week about the island is shifting. It's flipping on its head. So there's nothing that's stable. There's nothing that's stable. There's nothing that's certain. I made a post last night, pretty close. I mean, it was late in the evening for me, 8, 9 o'clock. And it was just a question that's been rolling around in my head. And I posted on LinkedIn and a little survey, a little poll. And it said, who do you think is more successful? And there was two options. And it was those who are certain or those who are ready. And I woke up this morning and there's, you know, over 5,000 views on it and people are voting and commenting. But I haven't talked to you about it, Kyle. What do you think?
Yeah, I saw it. And you know, it's a tricky one.
Yep.
To be really clear, right? Mm-hmm. Because readiness is important, right? Understanding that, like, anything can change at any time, being ready for that. But a lot of times what happens is people that are ready have concrete plans, right? And that's what they sense as readiness. Like, I'm ready for that. They're pointing at something saying, I'm ready for that, right?
Yep.
But people that are certain are grounded. They're saying, I am certain. And it depends on what you're certain. I think this is the key to answering that. It depends on what you're ready for, and it depends on what you're certain about.
That's right? An interesting point. Yeah. So what would you pick between those two?
Yeah. For me, and I voted, I picked that I would rather be certain than ready. Right?
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
Because I want to be certain in who I am, what my vision is, which is bigger than what my actions are.
Mm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times what readiness means for me is I'm pre-planning my activity or actions.
Mm.
And now I could, you could take that the other way where it's like, I'm ready to not be drowned by the things that are coming, right? I'm prepared to shift and move, right? That's where I say, like, you know, it depends on what you're ready for and it depends on what you're certain of.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're certain of your current situation and how it's not going to change and how you can fix everything, then that's actually uncertainty.
Yeah, no, now that you, like, bring this perspective up, it does, because I'm in the ready camp, right? But once you contextualize why you think that way, it changes. So I think of readiness as preparedness. I think of it in terms of, you know, I like Jocko, the Jocko podcast. And he talks about, like, when you're planning for a battle, you never, ever, ever, ever know what the enemy's going to do, ever. So you can never be certain. You can just have a plan and be prepared to execute and know that you're prepared to adapt to whatever happens. And the same is true for sporting events, right? Football teams can go out and be like, we're ready. We're ready for this game. Like, I'm an Eagles fan, so like, we're ready for Dallas week. But you're never certain that you're going to win.
Mm.
You know, so I was thinking of it that way. But in the same line, like, what are you certain of, right? If you're certain of, like, well, nothing is going to settle, right? But I think I approach it more from the certainty, like, I'm certain this plan is going to work. I think that if you get into that point, like, I would never do anything. Like, this event we're throwing, big event, Tuesday night, I'm ready for it. We're prepared for it. But I'm not certain it's going to be great. I think it's going to be great. But there are a lot of days between now and then. So
right. And that's why, I mean, literally every single day, it feels like we're dreaming up something new, shifting an idea, planning the pre-content, replanning it, planning the event content, replanning it, right?
Yeah.
Because we have to be flexible with what's coming at us. And not just that, like, I think about things like this, and this is what we have the luxury in, especially with this event, because we've had such a short timeline, is so many people plan events. I mean, our industry, right? To speak at NADA, you have to submit your submission 9 months prior to the conference.
That used to be okay.
Yeah.
Because nothing was changing.
3 years ago, 9 months prior was like you were on the leading edge of thought leadership, right?
Yeah.
If you try and imagine what it's like to speak on something in 6 months from today, right? Early March.
Now, when did submissions end? It was like 3 months ago.
It was, right? But even now, you're planning your session for NADA. It's like, what does that even look like?
Yeah, remember what all your plans were in July for everyone listening? Remember your July plans and how great Q4 was looking and what the manufacturers were saying it was going to be like? Remember July? Imagine if you put certainty down in an NADA presentation so it could get submitted, go through compliance and all that stuff. And you're going to literally look like a fool in February or March, whenever it is. And you're talking about July.
Exactly. And Paul, it was actually so great because I found out and we found out that I'm speaking at Driving Sales.
Yep.
I thought it was going to be a co-moderated stage, but it's just going to be me and speaking on a topic that's really super relevant in acquisitions and building not just like the actual acquisitions department to purchase vehicles, but actually how that word gets out and how the marketing around that actually becomes super dynamic in the city.
Mm-hmm.
But as I was like going through building the deck, I was like, man, I couldn't have really built this deck 3 months ago or thought about what I'm going to talk about 3 months ago, because
it would have been so different. You would have thought about it, but it would have been based on a now obsolete premise.
Exactly. And so it's actually really, it brought me a lot of clarity into what I'm speaking on because it's only a week out.
Yep.
Because I'm able to listen to what's happening on LinkedIn or the stores that we're working with or the clubhouse discussions in David Long's room and go, okay, that's going to be super poignant to the people that are listening or in the room right now.
Yep.
Working out my readiness with the certainty of who I am.
We're getting good now. All right. we got 5 minutes left. So here's a headline. Everybody listening, this is from yesterday. It was updated by CNBC last night at 9 p.m. GM says it will double annual revenue, double by 2030 to $280 billion in a digital push to be seen more like Tesla?
Any time that it's like GM chasing Tesla, would any GM dealer ever think over the last 10 years that that's going to be the idea?
Corporate policy is like, we're going to be more like Tesla.
Yeah.
That's the plan.
You know what? And if you read the article, and we can link the article in the show notes, which nobody ever reads or clicks on, but you can go search it, right? If you actually read the article, there's some commentary about them. It's not just chasing Tesla. It's chasing an evaluation based on being a tech company.
Yep.
Right. So they're not actually chasing being a better automotive company. They're chasing being a better technology company, which is a really interesting differentiation from what like just chasing EV is.
Yes. It's a, I mean, so there are dynamics to announcements like this. And, you know, first, let's state the obvious. They're talking to investors. So they want to tell investors what investors want to hear. And I would also add, whenever people come out and make announcements like this, it does two things. Number one, it reminds you that most of the people saying this aren't going to be here, you know, or with the company when they're going to be accountable for having done it or not, right? Same is true with politics. So there's definitely a political investor hype angle to it. But Kyle, you brought up a really good point about what this signals to the rest of the industry.
Yeah. So when the rest of the industry is, wait, what I just said or what I said earlier?
No. What you said earlier, basically you were saying,
yeah.
You were saying that like this kind of puts a flag in the ground and says, it's okay to have big audacious goals like this and showing people like, hey, we can do this, everyone.
Yeah. What I think is really cool is for, you know, I think like what it was it back in 2012 or 2015, I think it was either Hyundai or Kia was kind of the first ones to say like, we're going to have backup cameras in every single vehicle that rolls off the line. Right.
Yep, I remember that.
And then all of a sudden it became a government mandate that happened. Right. They kind of, the OEM actually led the charge to a government mandate for safety.
Yep.
Which was an interesting turn of events. Right.
Now our kids will never know how to back up without a camera.
Exactly. Right. they don't know how to throw their hand behind the headrest and all that.
It,
right?
Whip it around. Yeah. But I agree though. Backup cameras were a really good idea.
Yeah. So, but the idea being that you can make these audacious goals and statements that are much past, like that's vision past what incentives are we going to run next month?
Absolutely. Oh my
gosh. And that's really cool as an industry.
Refreshing.
Because it gets the franchise dealers thinking, okay, now we talk about this all the time, like a solid foot in the present and a solid foot in the future, right? What does that look like for a franchise retail dealership to understand that building plans, staffing plans, all of that, you have to understand what it looks like to do that well for November, but also to do that well for 5 years in the future.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Here's one encouraging line from this. It says, Wednesday ahead of investor presentation in which it detailed how the company plans to hit those targets through traditional automotive operations and new software and data focused businesses. So that should put some dealers at ease, right? Like, okay, they're going traditional operations. And so I thought that was an interesting part that they put in at the beginning. And that led me to think of like, we talk about this a lot. Like how can a dealer be ready? Well, look, this isn't going to affect your used car business. This still gives you the opportunity to build an incredible, airtight customer experience and brand and process that regardless of what the OEM does, you're ready. You're ready to be a retailer.
That's right. And staying different while doing that, right? Understanding that you are carrying a dual brand philosophy, meaning an OEM brand philosophy and a dealer level brand philosophy,
yes,
is really, really important,
yep,
especially when it comes to used car marketing and loyalty.
All day.
Right?
All day.
And yeah. So if we can have those two feet, one in the future and one in the now, as well as understanding the dual brand philosophy around internal processes and external marketing, dealers are going to be sustainable. And I think the OEMs understand that a sustainable dealership model that is profitable and well-focused is a good business plan.
All day. Kyle, you got some new shoes. We got like 30 seconds left. What's up with these shoes?
Yeah, these shoes are so fly. We're going to debut them next week at Digital Dealer Driving Sales. They're on brand for Contagious. It's really fun. And Nike did a great job aligning with our brand.
Yeah, so they're cool like that. Make sure you check out Kyle's LinkedIn because he's going to make a post about them. Hey, if you're going to be in Vegas, please get tickets to this event. We're going to have an amazing time. It's all shaping up. But until tomorrow, lean in and make sure you're ready. Everywhere I go.
the people really want to know who I is and who I be. They stop and stare when they see me. If a sitter wants no need to repeat, run up on me, watch you fall to your knees. Tip my